second case this morning, which is Alexander v. McKinney.
Good morning, Honorable Justices. This is a unfortunate, despicable case to be involved in where a lawyer, an innocent former prosecutor, former police officer, is framed by a prosecutor of a crime of bribery. And that's exactly what we have in this, for political reasons, for other reasons. And it was done at a time in an investigative state, I mean, if you even, that's kind of stretching it, under the Burns and Ember case, which he would not have any absolute immunity. And it he doesn't have qualified immunity. And that's kind of what we got into talking with the trial court. The trial court found that he had qualified immunity, but this court specifically, under the same facts, in Buckley 4, would have found that he did not have McKinney did not have qualified immunity. If the court went on to talk about if Fitzsimmons not only violated Buckley's rights during the investigation, but also deceived his successor, James Ryan, about the true state of affairs, he could be liable under the rationale of Jones.
There seems to be some confusion over the constitutional right that he was deprived of.
And I agree. And that is that was not very articulately set forth. I think that it is the deprivation of liberty and the due process violation of right to a fair trial are the rights, and they were set forth in the complaint.
But I thought your claim as stated, and it was, I mean, was his due process rights to not be deprived of his liberty premised upon manufactured false evidence?
That's correct.
This kind of due process claim is, I mean, our circuit has found it's not cognizable under 1983.
I could not hear you, Your Honor.
I said, you know, our circuit, if I think your claim is that McKinney violated his due process rights to not be deprived of his liberty premised upon manufactured false evidence, I think that's the language that was used. And I haven't found any authority in this circuit saying that that's cognizable under 1983.
That's correct. I haven't found any. You're correct, and there's none that says that that doesn't have a right to that. There are some decisions in other jurisdictions that have found such a right, and I think that's what we're waiting for this court to determine, whether or not that does set forth a constitutional violation for which Mr. Alexander would be entitled to recover. There's no question he was arrested. There's no question he was taken to jail. There's no question he bonded out. No question that he had to go through a jury trial, have his reputation drug through the mud.
Yeah, but the problem is our Brooks case, because it was that same type of claim that was made that you were trying to make. And it's a fairly recent case decided in 2009 by our court. And the claim there was dismissed, saying that a plaintiff can't state a due process claim by combining what are essentially claims for false arrest under the Fourth Amendment and state law malicious prosecution into a sort of hybrid substantive due process claim. And that's what I think you're trying to do here. So I'm trying to figure out what's different about what you're arguing, because it seems to me that case is right on point.
And you are correct, that is close. I mean, I think it is similar. The cases have, though this court has gone on and talked about the substantive due process denying a right to a fair trial in the Hill case, which was 2010, or in the Kitchen and the Birds case, which is a district court case. But if you go to some of the other districts, and the 2nd District, particularly in the 8th District, cases cited in the brief, In the dissent by the Supreme Court on certiorari, they tend to indicate that there is a substantive due process right that should be recognized in situations such as this. That you aren't, shouldn't be limited solely to your state claim of false arrest or your state claim of malicious prosecution, but you're entitled to proceed under 1983 for the civil rights violation. Because there's no question he's operating under color of state, and there's no question that he's doing this in an investigative capacity, which a police officer would be found to have violated 1983 if he did this. And so, consequently, we think that Mr. McKinney should be held to the same standard as a police officer if he did the same acts. And that's the distinction that we believe should be made. I'll reserve the rest of the time.
Of course, if this was a false arrest claim, you'd be time barred from filing that, right?
You're correct.
The complaint was filed in 2008, so even if we ignored Buckley, which is one of our decisions, and we went with Zachary, which is that Second Circuit case you referred to, you'd be barred anyway because of the statute of limitations problem.
The statute, we didn't file it within the 2 years because Mr. McKinney was still the prosecutor until after the two-year period had expired. And nobody was going to go back into that snake pit, file this against a sitting prosecutor after he'd already been acquitted of one time going through a bribery trial.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Reason?
May it please the court, Alexander has never identified a constitutional claim other than a vague and amorphous substantive due process violation, which he asserts in his brief. Such a Fourth Amendment claim is not clearly established in this circuit, and in any event, Alexander does not claim, nor can he claim, a deprivation of liberty required to make out such a claim. The district court properly dismissed the complaint after granting some qualified immunity to Mr. McKinney.
If the special prosecutor unknowingly relied on evidence fabricated by McKinney, why wouldn't McKinney be liable for violating Alexander's constitutional rights?
I couldn't hear all of what you said. I'm sorry.
Let me speak up. If the special prosecutor unknowingly relied on evidence fabricated by McKinney, why wouldn't McKinney be liable for violating Alexander's constitutional rights?
I don't believe that the answer would be any different whether McKinney was the prosecutor and knowingly did it, or whether a special prosecutor unknowingly used the evidence. So,
and why is that?
Well, I'm not sure that.
Why are you saying it wouldn't be any different?
It would not be different because it's the manufacturer of the evidence, I guess, that would be the basis of the substantive due process claim. I mean, absolute immunity would cover any use of it. And so I think it's irrelevant whether the prosecutor. Who the prosecutor was that actually used it. Maybe I'm misunderstanding your question, Your Honor. The short answer...
The special prosecutor, if whatever he used, because that came to him and I assume didn't know about anything nefarious, and he used it, that would make that immune because under absolute immunity, I suppose.
Yes. In fact, I believe the cases say that even if he knew it was manufactured evidence, the use of that would be still entitled to absolute immunity. What the claim here that the manufacturer of the evidence before is only entitled to qualified immunity, and that's the situation that we have in the cases, Judge Williams, that you brought to opposing counsel's attention, which is that in this circuit, there is no substantive due process right to be free of manufactured evidence. Rather, the harms that come from those error violations, if any, are only cognizable under things like malicious prosecution, false arrest, those sorts of claims. The claims that actually have been disavowed by Mr. Alexander in the district court and someone here today.
Let me ask you this question. Why wouldn't a finding of qualified immunity for McKinney encourage prosecutors to deceive special prosecutors to avoid being held liable for misconduct committed in the investigatory phase of their work? In other words, I'm trying to get to, you know, what the limits or the rules should be and whether a finding of qualified immunity for McKinney would have the effect of encouraging prosecutors to deceive special prosecutors to avoid being held liable for misconduct committed during an investigation.
Sure. I think it wouldn't have any bearing on it because even if Mr. McKinney had prosecuted Mr. Alexander and there not been a special prosecutor, he still would have been entitled to the qualified immunity. So seeking out the special prosecutor actually provides no cover. Whoever the prosecutor is in the use of the evidence at trial gets absolute immunity, and then depending on what the allegations are and what circuit you're in, perhaps, then the manufacturer of that evidence may or may not be entitled to qualified immunity, or I should say the allegation of manufactured evidence. But most importantly, Judge, I don't think that the court needs to even reach the question, because any due process claim has to result in a deprivation of liberty. And the only deprivation of liberty that is cognizable here is the brief detention for the arrest and the processing before he posted bond. He posted bond on the same day. And that does not rise to a sufficient deprivation of liberty under the Due Process Clause. Rather, that has to be brought under a false arrest claim under the Fourth Amendment. And the Albright versus Oliver cases from the U.S. Supreme Court and this court establish that fact. It point the court to Justice Souter's concurrence in the Albright case. Specifically, he addresses why this is true. So you cannot morph a Fourth Amendment claim into a substantive due process claim just because that claim is time-barred and it's now inconvenient for you to assert that claim. You have to bring it if at any time, at the proper time, and you can't somehow bootstrap a Fourth Amendment claim onto a 14th Amendment substantive due process claim, one that isn't even recognized in the circuit, which would bring me to the point, another point, which is a clearly established prong of qualified immunity. In this circuit, the court has made clear that this sort of manufacturing evidence claim is not cognizable, and so there was no clearly, it would not be clearly established to make it so now. Justice Thomas's dissental in the Michaels versus McGrath case in 2001 also doesn't establish that it's clearly established. In fact, it shows that it's not clearly established. He says that this circuit in Buckley versus Fitzsimmons says that this sort of claim is not cognizable, and that the Second Circuit had said that, and then perhaps the Eighth has said that it is, and he thought that that was a sufficient split among the circuits to grant certiorari and drew no other votes for that. So it is not clearly established, and even the Supreme Court has recognized, at least one justice has recognized that. Every other case that Mr. Alexander cites all has a significant deprivation of liberty, and all after trial. Well, that's not true. I guess the Zahiri case is a pretrial case, but he couldn't post bond, and he was held for 5 months. The McGahee versus Pottawatomie County, Iowa, he served 25 years of a life sentence, Mr. McGahee did, before being they're found to be in a Brady violation in that case. The Michaels versus McGrath case, which is the dissental by Justice Thomas, the person served 5 years in prison before the New Jersey Supreme Court reversed his conviction, or her conviction, I believe. All of these cases, Albright versus Oliver is a case from this court where bond was posted and qualified immunity was granted because, in part because, there was no showing of a deprivation of liberty. And Gerstein versus Pugh, a 1975 case, a habeas case, but establishes that the brief detention after arrest for processing and posting a bond is a Fourth Amendment issue. It is not a 14th Amendment issue. And the deprivation of liberty needs to be have a significant 14th Amendment due process component to it. And there is none here at all. I should also point out that opposing counsel characterized his claim today as a denial of a fair trial claim, and he disavowed that claim in the district court specifically. The only thing that he, what we can tell from his brief, and I have problems really determining what that is this manufacturer of evidence claim, which the Buckley case, the Burks case, and others say is not cognizable. If there are no further questions, we ask that the court affirm the grant of qualified immunity to Mr. McKinney.
Thank you, counsel. How much time?
Thank you. Interesting question here, because I think that there was a process here by Mr. McKinney to eliminate Mr. Alexander as a political rival for whatever, for his criticism of his drug task force. And it was to enter into this conspiracy to manufacture evidence and then hand it off to an unwitting special prosecutor who then brought the criminal charges. That's precisely what happened. And that is precisely what this court talked about as Buckley as being different. Buckley 4 being different and allowing, and so to say that there was no notice that this would not be tolerated by this court and allowing prosecutors to know that they wouldn't have qualified immunity in these situations, it doesn't fly because it's set forth precisely in Buckley 4 that under these circumstances they wouldn't have that. This is a deprivation of due process. This is something that this court should look at under the 14th Amendment. Mr. Alexander, nobody, no lawyer, no anybody should have to go through what he went through because some prosecutor decides to manufacture evidence and then hand it off to some unwitting special prosecutor. Other jurisdictions have examined this and found this to constitute a due process violation. We just ask that this court reverse, send it back, send a correct message that this won't be tolerated. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.